When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 206, McMonagle here with you, 877-337-6666. How about those garden teams? It's a garden party. It is a garden party. As the Knicks, as we talked about in the open, you can go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app if you'd like. The rewind feature, if you get it in the next 24 hours. If not, go back and check out the podcast. Each segment's podcasted. Go back and check it out. And, of course, the New York Rangers sweep away Ovechkin. I'm sure Ovechkin was on the team, wasn't he? I'm not sure. I feel like he was there, but for some reason, I don't remember him doing a damn thing. Funny. But I'm sure he was on the team. But they win 4-0 a sweep of the Capitals, who, let's be honest, didn't belong on the ice with them. It was a great matchup for the Rangers. That's what you get. That's what you get for being the President's Trophy winner. That's what you get for the most points in the league. You get the best matchup in the first round, or at least that's the way it should be. And they sure did. Against a team who was one of the worst statistically to ever really make the playoffs. Were very good in the second half despite trading away some players at the deadline. Had a good power play. I guess one of the best in the NHL, if not the best in the NHL in the second half, the Capitals. But ultimately, they just were not anywhere close to being on the Rangers level. And it was the most ho-hum, never a fear, never. After game one, it just felt like this isn't going to be a series. And it just never felt like one. The Rangers are far better. This one was a little back and forth. They didn't even play well in this game. In fact, there were multiple games and multiple periods in this series. They didn't play very well. And still, they would come out with the lead. And, you know, they got what they got from who they needed to get it from. You were looking for a big series and a big playoff run here from Panarin. And he was okay and scored a goal in this game, scored two goals in the series. Played relatively well, played as well as they needed. I thought Zibanejad was the best player on the team this series. And, of course, Igor. Igor was great. In game three, he had the opening goal was just a really bad one. Besides that, was really good in the series, and they're going to need him to be moving forward because Carolina is a tough matchup. Now, that series isn't over. Good looks to the Islanders for keeping that series alive with a double overtime win in game four, and hopefully they can give him, hey, right now the mantra is win one more game, send it back to UBS and see what can happen. But even if it is what we all expect it to be now, with the series being 3-1, Carolina's a damn good team. Carolina's favorite to win the whole shebang. And they are a tough, fast, smart, tough hockey team. But right now, I feel really good about the Rangers. I feel really good about them. I feel good about the coach. I feel good about the top players. I feel good about the young kids. I feel good about the goalie. And I think that's the X factor, because I think, theoretically, they walk into every series with arguably the best goalie. And if he can be what he's been here, there's no reason the Rangers can't win. If that power play can be what it's been, there's no reason they can't win. But, I mean, this was just an easy series, and it sets them up, which is what I talked about. You needed it to be an easy series. You needed to take this Washington Capitals team out back and be done with it quickly. Because if you're going to go on an extended cup run, you need a little bit of a break. And I think that was a major reason why those good, really good, really good Ranger teams of, you know, the early and mid-2010s that constantly went to the playoffs and constantly won a series like 5 or 6 years in a row, obviously made it to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Kings. Like that team with Tortorella and then Alain Vigneault. That team that always was in the playoffs with Lundqvist behind in the net. Part of the reason they never, for me, got over the hump was how many games they had to play. How many seven-game series? One, anything could happen in seven games, but they happened to win a lot of them. Hank was brilliant in game sevens, and they have a really great record, and it was a lot of fun game sevens because there's nothing better in sports. But it just felt like you can't go through that every single time playing these long, hard-fought, knock-them-out, drag-them-out series. And to not allow that to happen and to not get tripped up once and to still be good enough to beat a team even when you aren't at your best, and to have your goalie step up and make sure it doesn't happen and to sweep a series and now kick your feet up and wait for the end of this Carolina Islander series and get a little bit of a breather and make it through without drama, make it through without, you know, injury, make it through without being exhausted is a major positive for this team, a major positive for this team that can do anything. That honestly, when it comes to whether it's, you know, they got Matt Rempe who can be physical. I think they can be physical. Trouba, they can be physical a little bit. They're not the same team that was pushed around by this Caps team a handful of years ago that they felt like they needed to change after that series and after the way that season ended that year. But they're obviously super talented. They're fast. They won faceoffs at an amazing clip in this series. They do everything. And there's no reason. It's a tough series. It's not going to be a sweep against Carolina. We understand that. It's going to be a hard-fought series. But they'll have home ice advantage. And right now, I feel as good about the Rangers as I feel about it as you can possibly feel. And I feel like both of these teams right now are poised, especially. I don't want to look ahead. But they're better than the Pacers. They're just flat out better. And anything can happen. And the Pacers now will be a different team with experience. And if one, you know, we call them this young team. That you make it through a playoff series. You beat Milwaukee. Even without Giannis, you win a playoff series, you gain confidence, there'll be a different team in that second round. They're a young, talented team that can score a lot of points, and they'll be tough, but I think the Knicks are better. And so as we get ready for these two teams to hopefully move forward throughout their prospective playoffs, the Knicks and Rangers are as dangerous as anyone in the sport. And certainly in the Eastern Conference for the Knicks. And we look forward to hopefully having two long playoff runs. But the Rangers have already advanced with a four-game sweep for the Capitals, and they await the Islanders and Carolina series to end. And in the meantime, much-needed rest, relax, and look forward to the rest of their playoff run, which should be a long and fruitful one. And it's been a long time since we can say this around here. It's been a long time since we go night after night, playoff win, playoff win, playoff win, playoff win. I know they got two yesterday. It's been a long time since we've had this. It's been a long time since it's felt this way. And it feels good. It feels good. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, yes, it does feel good, Dan. Yes, it does feel good. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you, Val?
You know, I'm doing good, man. I am doing good. I had a beautiful couple of days, man. You know, I want to talk some Yankees and some Knicks. Real quick, because I know with a beautiful day like today, you're going to have the lines busy. A lot of people waiting to get on. But I'm going to do the Yankees first, and then I'll get into the Knicks after. You said something just now, and I actually called and spoke to, I like to call him Uncle Slick Rick. Ricky Ricardo was on yesterday in the overnight.
Sure.
And I said the same thing. I could not understand, you know, and he is so lucky with the way the last two games went, Saturday and Sunday, and the blowouts that we had. Yesterday took a little bit longer, yesterday's game took a little bit longer to develop before it became the blowout, but between Saturday and Sunday, it was big. But I said the same thing, man. Why would you bring that kid in? And ironically enough, back-to-back days would have been these two games that we just had Saturday and Sunday with a game, if you wanted to see what the kid had and see if he was somebody that would be useful moving forward. Both of those games, once it got to big scores, would have been beautiful times to actually bring the kid in there and see what he had.
Well,
in a game like today, when you were worried about not, you know, why did we go to Mariachio a second day? You know what I'm saying? Having to bring Ian Hamilton in and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just nice to see them get clicking again. You
he
know,
did. He did bring in Tompkins, and Tompkins not really a kid. I mean, he's a major league veteran. It's just he hasn't pitched with the Yankees yet, and that's a weird spot to bring him in for his first.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He has not played with us yet, and he just got here. Like, they were even saying the kid was trying to figure out furniture. Susan Woman was talking about that. They're trying to figure out furniture for, like, you know, he doesn't know where his clothes are in Minnesota, or if they're here, they're there, whatever it is like that.
Yeah, he's been
just
moving around
right
a lot.
There in that moment. It made no sense. With nine pitches from Clay Holmes, made no sense. But it was good to see Gleyber wake up. It was good to see Rizzo starting to come out of his, you know what I'm saying? He had a good weekend, too. So those were beautiful things. You know, and everything is cooking. The offense just looks nice. But to get to the Knicks, man?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Mac. You know, the temperament from the team overall, just like that bully smart. You know what I'm saying? Like, they do not let, like, that physical style is our style. Don't come and try to take that away from us. And if you want to get like that, there were moments in the game when you saw Brunson actually getting in Embiid's face. Like, dude, you know, you could try to be tough and all that stuff like that, but them extra nonsense, like, you need to cut that out. And it was almost like Embiid looked at him like, you know, like Big Brother was speaking to you. And we just put our will in that game. You know, that Tibbs mentality with whatever it takes, whatever we got to do. You know, Josh Hart, you can't give me the points. Give me the rebounds and be everywhere in the court that I need you to be. You know, that bag with Precious. I feel like Tibbs was holding that bullet for a minute. And, you know, he was forced to use it today, but it did what it had to do. You know what I'm saying? It's just beautiful. Just the one thing I will say, though, and like you jumping forward a little bit and you started talking about the Pacers. Two things on that real quick. Firstly, it would be beautiful if we could wrap this up on Tuesday night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just like we come back home, our role players are in our comfort zone, and now we just do the thing and we just get it over with. But like I said before, if we have to, we just want to get one of these two games moving forward. But what I will say, you know, two things on that.
Well, you don't want to go back. You don't want to go back to Philadelphia.
No. We don't want to do that.
You want to win it right here.
Yep. But I was watching that Pacer game today, and two things stood out at me that were kind of odd. The first one was when the game. I don't know if you probably didn't get a chance to see because there was so much going on. But when the game first started, they called back-to-back technicals, one on Pascal Siakam, and it was almost like he was going back up the court after he had what he felt was like a real, you know, I think it was a layup or something like that. Like he towered through somebody, and he saw him running back up the court, and he kind of stared the guy down. And they gave him a technical for taunting. A little while after, Beverly does something, and he like just looked at somebody as he was going back down the court and said something to him, and he got one for taunting. And now they keep running this highlight, like what was one of the top plays of the night, with Miles Turner dunking on somebody and literally yelling in the dude's face like one of these primal screams like, oh, get off of me.
Right.
How that like goes from one end of the extreme to the other, I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is, you were saying some stuff about the Pacers, man. They were throwing up some threes in that game, Brother Mac. Like, you know me, I'm never scared of anybody. But, like, let's not start the whole thing with picking and choosing who we want to see. Because either one of those teams, man, even with Milwaukee being battered and damaged, they could, because Portis got kicked out, but he could have been a problem too.
Yeah.
Nice talking to you. I like the enthusiasm, and I feel exactly what you're feeling, Brother
Mac.
There you go.
Thank
you. This was a beautiful weekend,
and
today was a great day.
It was a great day. Thank you. Yeah, no, they shot, the Pacers shot 50%, 51% from three. They shot 51% from three. And that's with Siakam going 0 for 4. Naismith 3 for 5. Turner 7 and 9. Halliburton 5 of 12. Shepherd 2 for 2. So, I mean, they shot 50% from the three-point line. They can shoot. They can score. We know they can score. They're one of the best scorers in the NBA. They're the best scoring team in the NBA. So, you know they can score. But I just, you know, again, I would have thought they were young and inexperienced, and while they can score, I don't know how they can defend, and I just think the Knicks are better overall. But now that if they make it through the series, and they're up 3-1, so it's not over, but if it is the Pacers, I'll feel differently about them, and yeah, they'll be a threat. Having made it through a series, having won a series, and now they gain that experience, that confidence, then they're a different team. No doubt. And any team would scare me. I mean, I'm not saying it'll be a cakewalk by no stretch. I don't think the Knicks are capable of playing cakewalks. I just don't think that's who they are. I don't think they would run through anybody. Although, you know, if they were, four games, one is just a gentleman sweep, really. So, Jarvis in Harlem, what's up, Jarvis?
What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. I want to talk about the Yankees. That previous call at the last hour was saying, like, not satisfied because Aaron Boone don't make the decision about bullpen, you know, decision, because he's talking about that other guy talking about, like, well, they got swept by the Oakland A's. I mean, well, it was a first game. It was a four-game series. They split the series. And
yes.
They didn't get swept.
No, he was talking about the Orioles. But the Orioles didn't get swept either. They took one. They lost 2 out of 3 to Oakland.
Yeah, because I know we 19-10. We in first place in 2-game lead of the Orioles. So we played 4 games in Baltimore, which is going to be a tall task.
Yeah,
so,
no, this is a big series coming up against Baltimore. No doubt about it. And, you know, I'm right. Here, my point is, right now, I think things are pretty freaking good in Yankee land. I'm hard pressed to really, like, because I expect Judge to now snap out of it. He's had 2 monster games or 2 big home runs. Gleyber Torres looks like to be coming out of it. And here's someone who, you know, I didn't mention yet. Carlos Rodon looks great.
Yeah.
I mean, for all the flack we gave him, for all the hate that was sent his way for a miserable year one, and it was a miserable year one, no doubt about it. He got hurt, and then he was terrible. He's not just, I mean, and his strikeout numbers aren't what they were when he was at the top of his game a couple years ago, but he struck out 7, I think, in the last game. He's pitching. He's changing speeds. He's changing eye levels. He looks really, really good. And Carlos Rodon right now has stepped up in the absence of Gerrit Cole and been everything they wanted him to be. And as you look at Blake Snell, who's on the IL right now, who pitched awful and then got hurt.
Like every Yankee fan,
everybody wanted to sign him because you can't trust Carlos Rodon.
Why Yankees didn't call up and get Blake Snell because Gerrit Cole got out. I mean,
now Carlos Rodon has been excellent. You've seen Nestor Cortez not been perfect, but he's been much better.
Up and down.
Yeah, I mean, he gave up 3 runs the other day. I mean, that should be enough to still win the game. But he's been good. The starting pitching hasn't gone deep into games, but it's been very good. And the bullpen has been, I think it's being talked about as if it's a disaster. And thank you for the call. I don't think it's a disaster. It just hasn't been that good. Hasn't been great. Clay Holmes has been great. Everyone else a little shaky. But it's still good enough to win all these games. They're 19-10, and I still hear from Yankee fans like it's a, you know, the offense hasn't started to click yet. Judge hasn't done anything. Look what happened the minute. Like, Yankee fans, wake up and look what happened the minute Judge and Torres decided to do anything. They scored 30 runs in the last 2 games. Like, this offense is better than what it's been. It's better than last year. It's far better. And Boone shook up the lineup a little bit. And put Verdugo cleanup, and Rizzo's gotten hot. Glaib, it's a couple days, but still, look what when they contribute. Judge has done nothing. Oh, this offense, it's the same as it was last year. It's Soto and the 2023 Yankees. It's the same crap. Judge has been awful. How is this lineup supposed to be what it can be with Judge being terrible? And he's not going to be terrible forever, and he's starting to come out of it now. And if Judge is what he normally is in the middle of that lineup, it's going to change how they operate. This lineup is fine. It's not. I don't think it's a world beater yet. I'm not saying it's, you know, an offense that can pound 15 runs a game, clearly, or, you know, just pound the other teams into submission where the bullpen and rotation won't matter. I don't know what kind of lineup it's going to be yet. But it's not been the slow start that it's been because Judge has done nothing. Gleyber Torres is one of the better offensive players at the position in all of baseball. He's not going to be terrible for the entire year. The last 2 years, he's been a very good. And last year, you could argue with Judge being on the IL so much, Gleyber Torres was the Yankees' best hitter last year. And I understand that's an indictment on how bad they were, but he was. He'll come around. He makes boneheaded plays on the in the field. He makes boneheaded plays on the base paths. I don't think he's a winning player, and this will probably be the last year with the Yankees, and I probably won't be too sad about it. I like him. I respect him, but I think the Yankees will be fine if he moves elsewhere. But let's not that, and that, but that's a different conversation than he sucks, he's terrible. Like, he's in a slump to start the year, and they've been winning. The Yankees are 19-10, and I hear so many fans complain about nonsense. It's unbelievable. The Yankees are in a good spot, and the Yankees will take on a Baltimore Orioles team that's so good and talented, yet they're a game worse than the lousy Yankees. The Yankees are in first place. They just lost 2 out of 3 at home to Oakland. Their top prospect, that they're all so super talented, this young team. Holiday's already back into the minors after being horrible during his first call-up. But the Orioles are great. The Yankees better win this year because the Orioles are going to be the best team in baseball for the next decade, easy. And these four games are going to be pivotal. And I'm looking forward to it. 877-337-6666. More of your phone calls. We'll get to the Mets and their win and saving. They were one strike away from being swept at home by the Cardinals. And the heroics, much like they did in game 6 of the season against the Tigers. They get off the deck. They avoid being swept at home. Vientos, the forgotten man, called up on Saturday, comes through with the home run after Bader comes through with the base hit. And they save themselves from being swept. We'll get to the Mets. And the other thing I wanted to say, I think there's something that took place with the Mets this weekend that I think I'm in the minority on. And we'll get to it.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it. At shortstop, Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 233, McMonagle here with you. So I mentioned about the Mets this weekend, as obviously they did have a big win yesterday. A come-from-behind win down to their final strike. Bader hits a bullet up the middle. And then Vientos with a walk-off two-run home run. And we'll see. Hopefully he sticks around. He's going to, you know, listening to Mendoza after the game. Sounds like he's going to be in the lineup today. We got to see J.D. Martinez this weekend for the first time, but ultimately it was a bad weekend for the Mets. Didn't play very well, couldn't get the big hit. Hauser, you know, Buto was not great, but not terrible. Hauser's been, you know, bad. He gave you a bad performance. And against a lousy hitting Cardinals team. And they managed to salvage the last game, which is an important win. You lose one series, you move on. And we'll see if Vientos is in the lineup moving forward and how they justify not keeping him on the team, which we'll see. Especially, I mean, they could use the offense, and if he's going to keep hitting homers, we'll see. But one thing I wanted to say about the Mets is I think I'm in the minority with this. The City Connect jerseys are hideous. I hate them. I actually think the hat can be is kind of cool. I like the bridge. I love them on the batting helmet. I didn't know they did that. I didn't know they would take the logo. I guess maybe not many other City Connect jerseys have like a bridge type thing in the logo that's that noticeable. But I saw them on the batting helmet. I thought that was fire. And I like the hats. The gray jerseys with the purple, it looks like a sewer grate. The gray and I think it looks terrible. I hate the Met City Connect jerseys. Hate them. I think they're hideous. I hate everything about them. I hate the colors. I hate the font on the letters. I think they're hideous. And then the white pants is such a stark difference. I think they're gross. I like the hat. I think the jerseys are gross. I didn't like them when they first came out. I didn't think that much of them. Then watching them on the players, hate them. Hate them. I think most people like them. I think they're gross. Those are hideous uniforms. Not just like, no. Hideous. I can't stand them. They're going to wear that every Saturday home game? Brutal. They are hideous uniforms. And speaking about the uniforms, I saw Jeff Passan break the news. The MLB, I guess they're gonna go back to the old jerseys. They're going to go back to the bigger lettering. They're going to change away from this material that shows sweat on any dark uniform. It's ridiculous. It looks like someone jumped in the pool. So thankfully, they're going to fix the lousy jerseys that changed this year and go back to normal jerseys. But I hate those Mets City Connect jerseys. Hate them. Tommy in Astoria. Tommy, before we get into your Met point, what do you think of the City Connect jerseys?
I was there yesterday. Listen, I'm as old school as anybody. I actually like them.
Okay.
And compared to some of these hideous jerseys, like the Red Sox with the bright yellow.
Yeah, I don't love them. But okay. What do you got?
I know it's a hockey basketball night, but quick baseball point. You know, Met and Yankee fans got to stop treating each series like it's a football game. It's out of control.
I know.
I mean, some of the callers, the Yankee callers Friday night was hysterical. I mean, they were killing everybody. Rizzo, Judge, Boone, Cashman. Guys, who's better in the American League than you? Maybe Baltimore?
Maybe they're a game worse right now.
Playoffs. Yeah, and as far as the Mets, I don't know if you saw the Met game today. Did you see what Mendoza did? He ate dinner. He went out to take
care of him. Yeah, and he stuck with him, yeah.
That's a big move. It's nice to see a guy go with his gut. You know, he would have been killed if he would have given up a home run there.
No doubt. I mean, that's the thing. But, I mean, listen, he was great in the game today. Quintana has been good. That was a great performance from him. Quick, efficient game. Yeah. Able to get through eight innings. Was able to talk his way to stay into the game and made it stick. So that was a good performance from him.
And as far as we get those, listen, him and Beatty got to see. These kids are 24. I mean, they're not old, but they're not 20, 21. We got to see once and for all what these kids are, if they're a part of our present, if they're a part of our future going forward. DJ Stewart's a nice, useful player, but he can go down without being DFA'd. You got to keep these kids up. We already lost a year of Mauricio, so we don't know what he is. Mm-hmm. We lost Alvarez for 2 months. We got to see. Leave these kids up. Give them at-bats. You know,
well, I don't think Beatty's going anywhere.
The
problem is you signed JD Martinez, and when the second you signed him, you sent Vientos down. And, you know, unless you want to see what Vientos can be, but you also want to make sure he gets enough at-bats. You don't want to have him toiling away on the bench instead of down in AAA playing games and getting better. So, like, that's you got to find at-bats for him.
Well, the problem is now teams are going to be putting out right-handers against the Mets. You got the opposite of left field last year when they were putting out all lefties because you move Lindor around to your weaker spot.
Yeah.
You pretty much nullify Marte and Alonso and Martinez. And the lefties, you have like Navarez and Beatty and Nino and Nimmo and McNeil. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
So they're going to face mostly righties. So if Beatty's not going to hit now, I don't know when his kid's ever going to hit.
I think I would keep him up too and try and find at-bats for him. And maybe at the expense of Jeff McNeil, who you just mentioned. Jeff McNeil's been bad. And the thing about Jeff McNeil, and I've been saying this forever, he doesn't do anything else. Like, Jeff McNeil, he's a versatile defensive player in some ways, but I don't know if he's really good in anywhere. He can play multiple positions, but none of them really well. He doesn't really walk, and he certainly doesn't hit for power. He does one thing, hit for average. And if he's not going to hit for average, what does he do for you? Like, that's the thing for me. Like, he doesn't do – he's not a very useful player if he's not hitting .315 at the bare minimum. And right now, McNeil is hitting .242. And he had a terrible series. He got a hit, and everybody applauds it, and everybody – oh, the broadcast. Look at him just throw that bat at the ball. Look at that swing. What a miserable swing, but he finds the way to get the barrel to the ball and dunks one in the center field. Yeah, he does that once a series. It's not enough. Like, if Jeff McNeil is going to hit .242 and have an on-base percentage of .317 and a slugging percentage of .341, what does Jeff McNeil do for you? He's just not a valuable player unless he's hitting .320. He needs to be competing for a batting title. He doesn't do anything else. Doesn't hit for power, doesn't get on base, isn't really a defender. He's a one-trick pony. And he's got to hit 320, and he's hitting 240. And Lindor is the one that's going to catch it for most of the fans, as he had a miserable Saturday. 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts. I mean, just miserable. And then the final out of the game, of course, comes all the way back to him, and he swings at that first pitch fastball and pops it up. And he's showing signs of it. He's giving you multi. You know, he had a good series at the beginning of L.A., came through with a big home run in San Francisco, a multiple home run game, and then came home and cooled off. And obviously, hit a home run yesterday. But he's hitting 200. His on-base percentage is under 300. He's got to get going. Kevin and Bethpage, what's up, Kevin?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, sir. What's going on?
Nothing. Just congratulations to our Rangers.
Yes, sir. Moving on.
It's a good time, I'll tell you. I'm having a pretty good sports season so far, being a Ranger, Nick, Yankee and Giant fan, you know, even after the draft.
Yeah, me and you, you know? Well, yeah, listen, I don't know. I'll see how the draft is. They didn't draft a quarterback at all. I don't know how I feel about Daniel Jones, and right now he's still the future, and that bothers me. But we'll see. Hopefully neighbors can be a big-time player, but we'll see. But, yes, we share every single team. And, yeah, right now, Rangers and Knicks, I mean, this is as good as it gets. And so just on a daily basis, waiting for another playoff game, whether it's the Rangers, the Knicks, I know they played both on yesterday. I think the schedules diverge again where they won't play at the same time, because now if they're going to start playing home games, you know, obviously they both play at the same place. They'll have to figure something out. But it should be fun. It should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to touch on the Knicks a little bit, I mean, with all the Villanova kids on the team, and Jay Wright's got to be pretty happy. He's got to be able to eat a banana sideways, I would say, at this point, right?
Yeah, he's probably got a big smile on his face, yep.
Right, four Nova kids on the team. And, you know, I know Jay back since Hofstra, and he recruited my kid from Amityville, Jason Frazier. I'm not sure if you remember that kid.
Mm.
But arguably the greatest player from Long Island ever, besides Dr. J and him. But 6 knee surgeries later, but he was like the final piece to that Villanova team. Randy Foy and, you know, Curtis Sumpner and whatever. And, you know, went on to obviously win 2 championships and stuff. But a little shout out to Jason, who's a coach now. And I really think he deserves, I think he's the missing piece for Pitino at St. John's. I'll be honest. I think, you know, some people, you know, not everyone loves Rick or whatever. But
I'm a
St. John's alumni like him. And I know Jason forever. And I helped coach him in Amityville with the legendary Jack Agostino, you know. Still the only team ever to win 4 straight state federation titles in New York State history, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no. I got you, Kev. I got you. Thank you for the call. But the Villanova point is true. And I've mentioned this because now we're seeing like these guys who play extremely well together and are obviously friends on and off the court, the chemistry on and off the court. They do the podcast together. And I'm wondering, you know, as you see this, I don't know if it would just be a straight up trend necessarily, but if things being equal and you're looking for a player that has a particular set of skills, or you're looking for a type of basketball player and you have an opportunity to pair guys who played together in college, particularly successful and won and went through a tournament and have that ability to harken back to big games together and have that ability to say, you know, I know we can do this. I've done it. I've gone through the gauntlet that is the NCAA tournament with him and went through a Big East tournament or went through an ACC tournament or you know, an SEC tournament or a Big Ten tournament or whatever. I'm wondering if more teams might look at this because the connection of these three players, and certainly, I mean, DiVincenzo's got to be, I mean, he's been aggressive. He's gotten to the basket, particularly in earlier games, not so much yesterday. But he's gotten after it a little bit. He got in the face of Embiid after the pulling down of Mitchell Robinson. He's been tough. He's been going to the basket. But ultimately, for DiVincenzo, it's a little bit about defense, but it's about making shots. That's what DiVincenzo's there for. He's got to make shots. Hart and Brunson are two guys who are the glue of the team. Now, they're doing it in completely different ways. I mean, Hart is 0-for-7 from the floor last night. I mean, Hart's got 4 points, all of them from the foul line. So, but he's got 17 rebounds. He's got 5 assists. He's got 3 blocks. But the two of them and how they work together. DiVincenzo, too, don't get me wrong, but it's just DiVincenzo's find some open space, Brunson or Hart will hit you. The two of them and how they operate inside this team, the way they play, the Hart's defense, Brunson's ability to run the floor, and Hart's ability to run the floor and get to the basket. I mean, just so many different ways. And you could see teams kind of copying that. You could see teams trying to figure out a way to maybe, if all things being equal, put together teams that have won championships together, or college kids who've played together and gone through this kind of thing, because it's been a massive success. Sports is a copycat league, not just the NBA, not just NFL. All the sports is a copycat league. And if you're looking at this Knicks team, do what they do with this roster and see how those three play together. Maybe it's something you could consider. Jan and Yonkers, what's up, Jan?
Hi, I love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Jan. I appreciate it. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm ecstatic. I had a beautiful Sunday. The way we won that game, tough as nails.
Tough as nails. There's no doubt about it. They are special down the stretch, and the other team folds, and they never do. They are better conditioned. They are tougher. And then the way they play defense on Embiid, and the way OG Anunoby and Achiuwa were able to slow him down. Achiuwa gets 2 block shots on him in the fourth quarter, including that one shot clock was expiring on the three that set the crowd off into a tizzy. That's really where all the Knicks fans really exploded there in that moment. Like, it was just, it's crazy.
Watching that game, and that's another thing. I saw Charles, TNT.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley, Kenny the Jet, Smith, Jack, Ernie Johnson. I like Ernie Johnson. There was an issue about Knicks fans buying tickets up to go to the game down there. And Shaq said they should shut the Knicks fans up. That's what the Sixers need to do.
Yeah.
Shut the Knicks fans up. Like, we don't have a right to buy tickets to go down to their stadium.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know about that. I think his point is that you can't allow the Knicks in that building, Knicks fans in that building, to be a thing. You got to make sure that you don't allow them to have moments.
I mean, we had a lot of moments.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I don't think Shaq is saying you can't buy tickets. I think he's saying if you want to, you got to make sure that doesn't become a talking point and you don't feel it, because there's got to be. You have to admit there has to be a little bit of a letdown. You're playing these games and you're supposed to be at home, and it sounds like it's half Knicks fans.
And they're shouting MVP when Jalen goes to the line.
I know, unbelievable.
But I do want to make one more last point.
Yeah.
I just hope we close it out Monday and don't, get rattled. And I also...
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
It's okay.
And I wonder if we have to understand that Milwaukee is not at full force. They don't have Giannis.
Of course, yeah.
They don't have Damian. They have half of Middleton, and what's his name? Portis got ejected for fighting.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm wondering if Indiana would have gotten 22 three-pointers if those four guys are in the game. And thank you for taking my call. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously it'd be a different series. I mean, obviously it'd be a different series if they were healthier. I mean, would they have gotten as many threes off? I don't know. Maybe, because they probably need to score more, because you would think Dame and Giannis would score more points. But, of course, if your point is, oh, yeah, great, oh, yeah, sure, the Pacers are winning, they're doing it against the banged-up Milwaukee Bucks, sure. But I don't care who it is. If they get through a series, The main reason, and matchups are part of it, but the main reason why I would have felt that the Pacers were a better matchup for the Knicks in the first round is just because of inexperience and the young nature of that team and their inability to, you know, really defend, and they score a ton of points and they're dangerous on any given night, as you saw them score 126 last night. On any given night, they could put 140. And then it's just a matter of keeping up, which could be tough. But if they get through a playoff series, I don't care who it's against. Honestly, I don't care how many injuries the Bucks are dealing with. If they make it through a playoff series, gain that experience, gain that confidence that naturally comes. The Pacers aren't going to sit around going, hey, who'd we really beat? You know what I'm saying? Like, we might. But they're not going to sit around going, well, listen, we were lucky to get through that series because they had nobody and, you know, we shouldn't. You know, I mean, in some ways, the coach will tell them they need to play better if they want to win the next series. But ultimately, they're going to feel better. They're going to feel more confident. Their shooters are going to feel confident after they go on nights where they shoot 50% from the three-point line. 51% from three. As a team. So while I would feel confident in that series, I would think the Pacers are probably more dangerous now in the second round than if you would have caught them in the first round. Kevin in Long Island, what's up, Kev?
Hey, thanks for my call. I appreciate it. Great show.
Listen, oh, thank you, buddy.
I just want to branch off what you said about the Villanova kids for the Knicks. I've been begging the Jets and Giants to do the same. Draft the whole offensive line of Georgia or the Alabamas or whoever, you know, together, man. Just to
you can't
grab
do
a
that.
Team. A team of people like the Villanova kids. Keep on going, man. Nice show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You can't do. You might want to, like, you know, you want to get a quarterback wide receiver tandem that have played together. Sure. As long as they're both really talented, that works. You can't draft an entire offensive line. It's not talented enough. And I know it's not strictly about talent because we've seen, especially with the Giants and the Jets too, as the Jets lose, although I don't know if they really care about losing them. But losing his name. The offensive lineman goes to the Eagles. I mean, as talented as all these draft picks are, you've seen Andrew Thomas drafted with the Giants, Evan Neal. We go through Flowers, all the different guys that have been drafted by the Becton. Can't believe I couldn't think of his name. Becton is going to sign with the Eagles, as his agent says. I guess it's not official, but obviously Becton's gone, drafted at the top, super talented, enormous, can't stay healthy and just hasn't played well. And a lot of it's coaching. We understand that. An offensive line needs to gel together. An offensive line needs to know how to play together. An offensive line needs, you know, camaraderie and needs to move as one cohesive unit. And it's not always about the most talented, but you can't just pick up a college offensive line and bring it to the NFL. There's certain aspects of a game you can. There's certain aspects, the quarterback, wide receiver, quarterback, tight end, maybe a cornerback tandem, if it's really good, could work together in the defensive backfield, a safety in a corner, or, you know, a linebacker in a corner, or a linebacker in a defensive and a defensive tackle who work together. Some aspects, you could do something like that. But it's not the same impact that a five-man starting five or five men on the court at one time in an NBA team, you know, with three-fifths, you know, 60% of your team on the floor have won a national championship together and have been through these tight games and can go back and dig and pull from previous situations where they found themselves in an enormous game with the whole world watching, down 3 points with 30 seconds left. Like, that's a situation they can say, hey, remember, you know, that time against Auburn or whatever. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, that's plausible. I'm not sure it works in any other sport. Certainly not to the level basketball does. And I'm not saying that you go out and draft specifically for that, but if it comes down to it, multiple players, you're looking in free agency, consider these two guys equal in the draft. They're both the same on your, I don't know if the NBA has draft boards the way the NFL does. But, you know, you're looking for a second-round pick. You design the same. You have guys on the same grade, but, hey, you know, our star played with him in college. Like, I think maybe you'll start to see more of that as you see this Knick team really gel and do it by being a gritty, tough team that's so reliant on their bench and their role players coming through. And even in this game, that it wasn't a prototypical, like the first two games, you want to point to the Knicks' depth. You want to point to what the Knicks do. You can point to those first two games where Brunson wasn't there. This game, it took 47 points from Brunson. And yes, the offensive rebounding, which they do better than anyone in the NBA, and is a calling card of this team, came through in the fourth quarter. And the defense and the hustle, all of it came through. But ultimately, I mean, you look at the box score, not a lot of guys scored points. Hartenstein, 8 points. Anunoby, 16. He got to the basket more than typical. And he got 14 rebounds in this game. That's a good game. He's 0 for 3 from three-point land, which is tough. But he shot 50% from the floor at 8 for 16. He got 14 rebounds, 3 blocks, and played excellent defense in the fourth quarter against Embiid, got 16 points. But Hartenstein, 8, got into foul trouble, was relatively ineffective in this game, and didn't play great defense against Embiid. Hart, as we talked about, 0 for 7 from the floor. 17 rebounds is where he impacted the game, 3 block shots as well. His defense, his ability to, you know, get rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, 17 rebounds overall. He scores 4 points. DiVincenzo, 2 for 7 from three-point line, gets 8 points in this game. Achiuwa has 1 point. McBride has 13. Bogdanović only plays a minute before getting hurt. So, yeah, you know, 3 for 5 for McBride from the three-point line. 2 for 7 for DiVincenzo. 0 for 3 for Hart. 0 for 4 from Anunoby. This wasn't the game where you point to and go, yeah, look at all those role players hitting all those shots. Look at all those role players doing this, doing that. Brunson scored 47 points, was the driving force of the game, kept them afloat early on, hit dagger shots late, but ultimately the defense and the offensive rebounding in the fourth quarter, the adjustment Tibbs makes when Hartenstein gets out of the game because of foul trouble, and throw in OG, who is doing, you know, different things in the game defensively. And we talked about that too. A lot of people wanted him strictly on Maxi. I don't like that. I like moving Anunoby around and using him as an all-around defender, as opposed to just putting him on one person, especially Maxi, who's so fast. And I don't know if that's best fit for him. But his ability to go now, you can throw him on Maxi and try to shut down Maxi. You could throw him on Embiid, and him and Achiuwa did an incredible job. And really, that's the story. The offensive rebounding in the fourth quarter and holding Embiid to 0 for 4 and only 1 point in the fourth quarter off a foul shot. That's the story of the game. That's where the Knicks won this game. That and Brunson being Brunson and scoring 47 points. I mean, that's really what won this game. I think it's also Philadelphia going into a freaking shell and having no idea what to do offensively in that fourth quarter. But partially it's because of how they defended Embiid and the offensive rebounds and the amount of second chances the Knicks got and the clock they were able to run off getting all those rebounds. It was incredible. And that's this team. On nights where Brunson doesn't score, they have the role players. Josh Hart will hit 4 three-pointers. You know, McBride will go off and hit 5. And on nights where Brunson scores 47, they let him do most of the scoring, and they D up and they get rebounds, and that's how it works.